Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight. This is our Saturday night special, the last day of January of 2015. My special guest tonight is John Pozo, the band The 4019s. John, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, John. I really appreciate that you having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. I love to talk rock and roll. I think you do too. So
absolutely.
I think we should have a good time. Well, let's start
okay.
off. Yeah, just for people to know about the band, and I know that the website is the 4019s, and it's spelled out .com. And if you could start off, John, just tell a little history of the band and maybe introduce the members.
Well, right now the members are myself, Nick Ziegler on drums, and Chuck Gorian on guitar. On our CD Spin It, we also had a guitarist, Chris Weldon, at the time. So we've kind of been together. We've known each other for years, and we're all from different bands. Nick and I were in a band called The Leonards back in the late 80s, early 90s. So Nick and I have known each other for a long time. And I would say in the last 5 years, we got together with the band The 4019s, and we put out two CDs now. The second one is the one you're listening to today, I guess, Spin It.
Correct. You know, sometimes I just, when we're talking, I start thinking about different things. Now, you were talking about the Leonards being in the 80s and the 90s. Talk
yes.
about, John, being in the music industry at that time and what it was like, and then kind of look at it now and then compare with what it's like right now, because the music industry has completely flip-flopped since the early 90s
'80s. I would agree. I think the end of the 90s, end of the 80s, early 90s was, we were kind of at the tail end of what, you know, trying to pursue a musical career was about. It was trying to get signed by a major label. We were out in L.A. We were based out of L.A. And, you know, we played a lot. And people actually came out to shows. And that's the difference I see about today. You're not really going for a major label. You you know, you have a bunch of small labels that can be your own label, and basically the internet is your source of distribution, where before we didn't have that opportunity. The main thing, though, is that it's very difficult nowadays to get people to come out to shows. There's just too much to occupy their time. And you know, even before that, in the 70s and 60s, that's when if I had a time machine, I'd love to go back then. Because there was really nothing to do at night, so you went to the clubs, and it was packed, and the clubs actually paid the performers. And nowadays, you know, clubs don't pay you, and it's hard to get people out. You really have to promote yourself and get people out there, and it's just difficult because people have so much more to occupy their times nowadays.
Well, that's a great point, John, because, you know, when I talk to people, I've interviewed a whole bunch of bands that have been through the 60s and 70s. I had the privilege of interviewing a band this past November that was and this is so cool. It's like the coolest thing in the world. It was Sweetie Jones and the Dixiecats, John, and they were from the 50s. They got together.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, they were a rockabilly band from like 53 to 57. They toured with Jerry Lee Lewis. And I was just going through the internet, and I found this group. I thought, man, these guys are so good. And I was able to get a hold of their drummer, who's still around and doing great. He's an attorney in Macon, Georgia. And I was able to get a hold of him and to get him on the show. And we compared that. And it, like you're talking about, like the 70s and 80s, he was comparing the
right.
50s and 60s to that. And it was
funny.
Yeah, they would get, they weren't real sure what to do, and they were all like 15 and 16 years old, and it was summertime, so they got in this old beat up car. I can't remember what kind it was, but they were driving up the East Coast, and they would stop at movie theaters, and movie theaters would let them play after the show, and they would go in, and there would be people there, and they would play their rock and roll show, and I thought, how cool is that? You know, it's like
that is fantastic. Yeah, that's fantastic, and that would be the time to really, really enjoy it for sure. I mean, you could actually make a living as a musician back in the day. Now it's even the older guys, you know, that were in that time frame, acknowledge the fact that musicians today, it's very difficult to really say, hey, I want to make a living at this. It's really difficult.
Now, do you think there's anything that like, you know, just the average Joe or anybody can do to change that? Because I've told, when I talk to people about that, they have a hard time understanding it, that, you know, there's so many great bands out there, John, there's so many incredible musicians, and you can go on the internet and listen to all these different amazing people, and it just blows your mind. But the
right.
fact of it is most of those guys don't make, if they make any money, it's very little. And even if they get, like, lots of hits on websites and they get all this kind of stuff, they still doesn't translate into money a lot of times. And it gets frustrating.
Right.
Yeah. So what can happen? I mean, I'm with you with the live music. I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and there is nothing that I like better today than to go hear a live band. But what do you think can happen to get people to go back to that? Do you think the venues need to change? Do you think it's – what do you think it is, John?
Well, I think it is a little bit because when I was, you know, growing up in that and being a musician when I was younger, there was always a cover at the door, and the cover went to the band. So that was a motivation to say, okay, let's get the word out, because, you know, there was a $5 cover or a $3 cover, but when you get 100 people in, you get $300, you know, or more. Now the bar owners, for some reason, have gone away from that totally. There's never a cover. And I don't know why. I don't know why they think it would turn people off or something. Because that's how I grew up. There was always a cover. There was always a bouncer at the door that you paid. You showed your ID and you paid the cover and you're in.
Yep.
I don't see that anymore. I can't remember the last time in the last, you know, 10 years that I went anywhere, unless it was, you know, a show where I had a ticket for it. But going into a club, I never see a bouncer at the door asking for a cover charge. It's bizarre.
No, it's been a while. I agree with you there. I think that, you know, a lot of times I've gone to shows where, you know, the band's going to be on, they advertise them at 10 or something like that, and it can be an hour later because they're waiting for people to come in. And
right.
And if people don't come in, then sometimes the people that are there leave, and it's like, oh, okay, how's that working out? But
exactly.
Yeah, what do you think also of, like, you know, when I talk to bands today, and I think it's kind of an interesting thing when bands start off, and I've interviewed these people that have been around a long time, and I've tried to get them together and say, maybe there's some things that you could learn from this. And what would you say, John, to the younger musicians that are starting out today that are all gung-ho, that, you know, want to invest a lot into their equipment and into their, you know, websites and things like that? What would you say would be the most the direct things that you should invest in as a musician to, you know, because you don't want to lose everything and you want to be able to invest in some stuff, but what are some of the good things that you would think they could do?
Well, you know, certainly as far as equipment and stuff, just go out and get fairly good used stuff, because at this point, you know, you can't really afford the best stuff, and it really doesn't matter when you're playing live that much. But the thing is, I think, and I'm hoping, that there's going to be a turnaround where, you know, with Twitter and you know, the new media that the kids are into, that they're actually, you know, not really into TV anymore, and they're online and they're communicating. So hopefully that communication, if you're in a new band now as a young person, that's a great way to get the word out. And hopefully young people say, yeah, I'd rather go see a band. But I'm hoping that transitions to that, because last year at Coachella, there were complaints, like the Replacements played there, and the crowd in front of the Replacements was thin because everyone's going to the electronic tents. You know, they're having just, you know, electronic music just playing. And that's the new thing. So hopefully it'll turn around. But I would say, you know, if you're a young guy in a band, you try to use your Twitter and try to get people out and you know, be anti-TV and, you know, that other stuff. Say, come on, Alex.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you on this one. And it's kind of interesting because I'm always trying to figure it out. I mean, seriously, I've been doing this show for about 7 years, and I've interviewed countless musicians, some that have, you know, I've interviewed this one band, John, that was a bar band at a bachelor party, and they were in this little small bar in Ohio, and I was listening to them, and they were doing country western cover songs, and there's a story there. I mean, you know, these guys were playing music because they love to play music, and you know, they were playing things that people would put on their cowboy hats and dance around a little bit, give them a few tips. And then, I've interviewed bands that have had number one songs and that have seen the fame and the fortune and all that, and that never lasts very long. But I'm I'm always trying to think in my head, you know, what is it that defines success for most musicians? And what is it, John, that would define it for you? Or does it? Or what is
it? Yeah, what it is, and I agree with you. I mean, you just have to say, hey, I need to get a day job, you know. And so that's funny you said the guy you interviewed from the 50s is an attorney. I'm an attorney also, and I think we become attorneys because, you know, at least trial attorneys, we got 12 people in a box that can't leave. We can try to entertain them.
You can get your guitar out and play a couple of songs.
You know, you can't do that, but you can really get your mojo off there as far as you have an audience and they have to listen to you, and you try to be entertaining, but absolutely you have to do it because you love it. And so first of all, you have to be someone who likes performing in front of people, and so that's your reward. I mean, nowadays it's not the money at all. At least at our stage, I would equate it to, you know, if you were a great golfer, you go out to golf and you have a great game, but you may have spent, you know, a couple $1,000s flying into the great golf course and paying for the fees and everything else, but you get the true enjoyment. So it's not the return monetarily, it's the return of going through the process. Like, the recording process is just so much fun. I mean, it's just a blast. So, you know, that's the thing I would say any true musician is really in for it. Is because, you know, you get the, especially when you're doing your own stuff, you get to create a song, you get, from sitting on your couch with your acoustic and then getting into the studio, and then everyone else adds their little bit, and the producer adds his thing, and then all of a sudden it turns into morphs into something much cooler, and you're like, wow, that's great. And then it's great, you know, to send it out and have guys like you that'll actually play the stuff and appreciate it. And we're like, wow, that is super. So thank you, John. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. And I think that's another interesting point, too, because when I started doing this, I didn't even know what internet radio was. And I was – this is kind of a weird story, but I was down at Point Pleasant, West Virginia with my wife, and we were at a Mothman Festival. And I've told this story, and people think I'm not, but there's – incredible story about this Mothman that in back in the 60s, and they made a movie out of it, and it's a whole big deal. And there's
Yeah,
it was a great movie. It was Richard Gere was in it, and it was my parents or my in-laws lived down there, and so they would say, "Oh, you got to go to this thing." And I thought, okay, we'll go to it. It's really cool. It's like a little festival, and they're, you know, it's all local people, and they have a lot of fun. And I sat beside these guys at the booth, and they had all the radio equipment. And I said, "What radio station are you with?" And this is like 2007, 2008, probably 2007.
Right.
They said, "Well, we're not with a radio station. We're on the internet." And I thought, "Oh, what does that even mean?" And they just looked at me like, "Well, we broadcast over the internet." And I said, "Well, who listens to it?" You know, they said, "Well, you know, you've got to get people to listen to it. And but there's, you can say whatever you want. That you can have, you can do whatever you want on it." And I thought, "Wow, that sounds pretty good." I mean, and John, me being from, you know, the back in the 60s and 70s, I can remember all of the, like we talked a little bit about the music industry, but about how it was and how controlled it was. And how they would feed the music to you and make stars that way. And, you know, and there was a lot of music that people weren't listening to. And that came from the college radio. And that created the college radio and the underground
right.
FM stations. And I think that's kind of what's happening right now with the internet stations. They're playing music that, I mean, I can listen to some great stuff that just blow your mind. And it's like, you know, people don't hear this stuff, you know, like
right.
your band and all these other bands that I've got to know. And to me as a music junkie, it's probably the best thing that could ever happen to me. It's like, wow.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And your Wednesday night show is great, man.
Well, thanks. And
what
I like doing is, you know, I you probably people hear this, but I don't like, you know, the genres. I like good music is good music. So to me, I can sit down and listen to a bluegrass band. I can listen to a punk band. I can listen to a metal band. I can listen to a spiritual group. I can listen to a choir. To me, a good song is a good song, and we're going
right.
to play it, you know. And I think it's one of the – and I listen to – the other thing I listen to a lot, I mentioned a little bit, John, was college radio, because that's – you can listen to all the different colleges now on the internet, their radio stations, and they play some interesting stuff that
absolutely.
I would – oh, yeah. You talked about the electronic music, a lot of that.
Right.
I was listening to this a university in Canada the other day, and they were if I could think of the name of it, and all they were playing were like old 40s ballads.
Oh wow!
Yeah, isn't that something?
That's very
and
cool.
Yeah, and people were, you know, loving it, and I thought, to me, that's where can it ever equate to money? Can it ever equate to that? I don't think so. But I think it's competing with the people that are in it for the reason of just hearing good music. Like,
right.
Yeah, I was telling people, like, when I was growing up in the 60s, and my song I loved was House of the Rising Sun by The Animals. And I,
sure.
I thought it was the greatest. John, it was the greatest song ever. But I had my little transistor radio, and I had to wait and wait and wait and wait till it came on. You know, there was no way I could listen to it. Unless I listen on the radio,
right.
And then, you know, if I had money or if I could buy the record, but back then that was kind of far between two, because it was kind of hard for me to do that. I lived in a small
sure.
town and didn't have a record store. That sounds like a real sob story, but
I get that.
I remember
well, the radio. We'd listen to the radio all the time because that was our you know, connection with new stuff. I mean, that was how you. Kind of, because TV was just, you know, three channels, and I'm like, okay, that's not really doing it. But the radio, yeah, that would be. You're right. That's you'd wait for your favorite song to come on. I mean, that's very cool.
Yeah, and I think today, you know, with it's just like if you and I are talking about a group, and you would tell me, you talked about the Replacements. You know, I had Go Time on last week, and they're a Chicago band, and they really are into the Replacements. And I don't know if you've ever heard of Guided by Voices, but they're they're
right.
from real close. They're from about an hour from here in Dayton, Ohio, and and it's like, you know, I talk to people that's never heard of them, and it kind of also reminds me, John, when you were talking about the clubs and people going to the clubs, there's a strip of clubs in Dayton that, gosh, if I can think of the name of that street, but back, that was the 90s, back in the, it was in the late 80s and the 90s when they would, there would be lines around the buildings to hear these bands, to hear the Breeders, to hear the Guided by Voices, to hear these bands that were just raw rock and roll bands.
Right.
And yeah, and I think maybe that's what needs to happen again. You know, it's just that experience of not so much the stage show, or, you know, I'm thinking Katy Perry, I'm thinking halftime show, I'm thinking all that stuff, but I'm thinking of just a rock band in a rock club. Nothing
which is classic. I mean, that's what you want. You want a dark club, and it's, you know, it's packed with people, and the band is rocking. I mean, how does it get better than that? Everyone's sweating. I mean, it's great.
My guest is John Posa from the 4019s, and you can go on their website, the4019s.com. Their newest release is Spin It, and you can pick that up right on the website, I believe. Right, John?
That's correct. Yes, that's correct. Or CD Baby, or any of those other things that kids know about.
Amazon and iTunes and all those
right,
fancy things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's pretty interesting. Let's play another song. How about Falling Down? Would you like to talk about, and we opened the show up with Modern Romance, and then we're going to play Falling Down. I don't know if there's something you'd like to say about those songs or.
Well, Modern Romance has been around for a while. I wrote that back in, actually, I hate to say, 1983, and with an old band of mine called The Strays out of Mount Pleasant, Michigan. But we resurrected it, and it's really gotten great response, which really makes me feel great, because it's like, oh, okay, it has longevity, and it doesn't, you know, sound outdated. As far as Falling Down, it's an interesting story, because Chuck Gorian, the guitarist, and is a San Francisco fan, and I'm a Packer fan. And we went down, this was 2 years ago, we went down, and the Packers got blown out by the 49ers. And we took a cab home, because we were drinking, you know, Red Ball or Red Ball whiskey or the little shots. But anyway, it was good. And I have a long driveway that kind of, it starts at the top and then goes down towards the house. So I actually fell down, and it inspired the song.
Oh, I've had some great stories behind songs once. Have you ever heard of a band out of, they're in New Jersey, called the Doughboys?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, the Doughboys are awesome. And I interviewed them once, and there was a song, and I asked, I can't remember the guitar player, this is a song I thought was awesome. And he said, oh, no, you can't play that song. And I said, why not? He said, that's all about my first wife, and I can't stand to listen to it.
Oh, that's funny.
Okay, but we played it anyway. This is Falling Down. This is the 4019s, and we'll be right back after this. with John Posa of the 4019s. That's Falling Down from their current EP, Spin It, which you can get on their website, 4019s.com, and CD Baby and Amazon and iTunes and all those good things. Now, let's talk about the rock song, the pop song. The length of that song, and I looked at some songs, John, that's on the EP, and they're not very long. They're from 2 to 3 to 4 minutes long. Some songs, there's kind of a strategy behind that, or a philosophy behind that, when you kind of look at when songs were beginning to be marketed back in the 60s and 70s, they wanted to keep them to a certain time. When you write songs, or when the band puts them together, do you guys consider that, the length of the song, or do you try to do that consciously, or how does that work?
No, actually we did, John, because we had our first CD out, which is No Expiration Date, and the songs were a little bit longer, like 3:40 or maybe 4:22 or something. And we consciously went in to Spin It and said, look, guys, let's make these as close to 2 minutes as we can, just to kind of get back to that thing where, you know, because the Beach Boys did that. I was amazed. They, you know, they did 12 songs in 24 minutes. And you're like, wow. And they don't seem like short songs. You get the chorus, you get the hook, you get right to the hook, and you know what it is. And if it's a catchy song, you love it. And if you don't love it, then you know there's another one in less than 2 minutes coming up. So it's kind of like that flow, you know. So it's like, okay, you know, so you're not investing a whole lot of your time in listening to the song, but hopefully the hooks catch you right away, and it's something that it'll get in your head, and you'll like it.
Yeah, you mentioned the Beach Boys and like bands like that and songs like that. It's just, to me, it's so amazing how that so much can be within that short period of time.
Right,
so
right. Like the Ramones did it all the time. I mean,
yeah, exactly. Right, and there was a band. I don't think they were very popular, but they kind of called the Nerves, which were they had a couple of Paul Collins came out of that band, and another guy
right.
came out of that band. Yeah, and they were really, really good, and their songs were sometimes under 2 minutes. But there was just, to me, it was just like, wow. They would like, it was like getting punched in the head real quick,
right.
you know, with
right.
music.
Right, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Now, what do you think, and I'm kind of interested in, first of all, just kind of go back to when you started in music, John, and how you got interested in playing. Go back to, like, in your family, was it a musical family? How did you get interested in music? And then kind of take us through the progression of music, you know, the bands and things that you were in.
Yeah, John, my father was a singer. He was a Marine colonel, but he was a singer. He was always a singer around the house. There was always music in the house. But it really hit me in high school. You know, that would have been like 78, 70, well, 76, 77, 78. And I really liked the punk stuff that was coming out. Van Halen at UNL was just all over the place. They were great. Boston. So that's when I said, I got to learn to play guitar. And then I did some in high school. But then once I got to college, I found out, you know, for someone who doesn't like go just hit on girls, you know, I'm not a real guy that walks up and has a great line or anything. So being in a
really
band,
cool lines, yeah.
It was, you know, because then girls would walk up and to me and say, "Aren't you the lead singer of the Strays?" And I go, "Yes," and that's all it took was the yes, and then she was mine for the rest of the night.
So it
was a bit shallow there as far as the girl thing, but I mean, the musically it was just so much fun. And you know, when you get in a band, I mean, there's nothing better. I wasn't a frat guy in college. I didn't like really, not that I'm against fraternities, but I'm just maybe a little more independent that way. But when you get in a band, it is kind of like a gang you're in, you know, and especially when you get a group that you really, you know, bond with everybody in the band, you become like brothers, and it's a cool little, you know, group that you get together.
Now, do you remember the first band that you were in?
Yeah, the first one was the Strays. That was at Central Michigan. That was like the first actual band. The other stuff in high school was just, you know, just us jamming and stuff, but not an actual band where we went out and played. But my freshman year at Central, we got this band together, and that's when we started. And so I didn't have the best college grades. You know, I was able to string it out for 5 years in college, which was probably the best years of my life. When you're in a band, you just, you know, don't get kicked out of college is the main thing, and get that cheapskin. But it was a blast.
And I totally agree with that. I think it's just a great time, and I'm always interested in the early bands and when people were in them. Now, do you remember when you were in the Strays, and do you remember the first gig you guys had?
Oh, absolutely. It was a cafeteria gig. It was the main quad at Central, and they would have they allow bands there on a Friday night. And this was back in, is this 79? And the drinking age had not yet turned to 21 in Michigan. I think it did it in, late 79. So they actually had, keggers on campus. They'd have these keggers and things, and it that brought people, too. And what was weird, though, was once the drinking age changed, then it was all the frat houses still. The guys that were 21 could get the kegs, and then they charged $5 at the door for all the beer you can drink, plus the bands would play, and the frats would pay you, pretty good. Those were great, great times. It was a blast. I'm not promoting keggers, but boy, it was fun.
Well, I can remember the same thing, because we started, the band I was in, we were playing in high school, we were playing in colleges, and our parents would take us.
Oh, that's great.
And we would play, they would sit there and watch us, and we would be real good and get in our car to go home. But it was one of those things where I can remember, and it kind of goes back, John, to what you were also talking about, that, when you're bit by the music bug, and, people have their day jobs now, and we have things we can do, but there's nothing like playing music. And once you've played it, and it's that reaction that you get from people, that it's addicting. That,
oh, absolutely.
If somebody likes it, and you're thinking, wow, somebody likes that? That's really cool. And I think that never goes away. And I think, we talked a little about the Dixie Cats, Sweetie Jones and the Dixie Cats, when I was talking to Homer about it. Now, Homer Scarborough, I believe he's in his mid-70s, and he is still playing and still still loving it, and still loving the whole experience. You know what I mean? It's like there's this. It just kind of makes you. I guess it just gets back to what the roots of when you were young, and you were like at Central and playing at the cafeteria, and that first feeling of having people gather around you and listen. And I think
you're hooked.
Yeah, it's one of the most amazing.
It's a strong drug. It's a strong drug, my friend.
Yep, and you can't seem to shake it.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So let's talk a little bit before I forget. What's 4019's doing right now? Are there any projects or anything going on that you'd like to talk about?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Thanks, John. You mentioned Guided by Voices. Right now we're having it's a 4-song 45 vinyl press at Musical Records. It's MUSICOL. It's in Columbus.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And Guided by Voices recorded. It's like one of the only studios where you can actually go in, record your music, have it mastered, and then have it pressed at the same studio. And you'll have a piece of vinyl come out of the same place. It's insane. And it's Warren Hull is the guy we've been working with there. He's the proprietor there, he and his founder. So that's really cool. We're really excited about that. So, go ahead.
Are you going to play in Columbus?
Well, we were in Youngstown in the fall, so we would love to venture that way for sure. Nick, our drummer, has a lot of connections in Pittsburgh, so we played the Hard Rock in Pittsburgh, and then we shot up to Youngstown. So, yeah, we would, in the future, we're really trying to move that way. And we're hoping, there's different ways. I really like vinyl. It's fun to listen to, and we're thinking if we, put four of the songs from Spin It on vinyl, it's just another promotional tool to get out there, and people like that stuff. So we're excited about that. And then we are going in, I believe it's the 16th of February, back into Dave Newton's Roller Coaster Recording West to start on our third CD. So we're excited about that.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. You mentioned Music Hole because I'm 10 minutes from Columbus and I know all about it. And I mean, it's been a staple here in Columbus forever. All the bands used to go there, and when back in
Right.
the
I read their history. It's insane. It's fantastic.
Yeah,
I
and
mean, we're really excited, you know.
it's great. That's why I said that. If you guys were gonna be there and do a gig at that time, that would be great because there's some good clubs in Columbus, some good rock and roll clubs. Like whenever I talk to people and they say, "Hey, you know any clubs in Columbus?" They say, "Well, right now it's hard to get a rock club because, a lot, like you were talking about, the electronic music and all the other
Right.
things going on." But there are some good rock clubs in Columbus, so you guys should check that out. That would be awesome.
We
I would go.
will. We will, John. That'd be
Yeah,
great.
you'll at least have me there, you know. So, and I've got a big family, so I always tell people I can. I have a, you know, my wife and I have 5 kids and all kinds of
Oh, very
people. So,
good.
yeah, we're like a
Very
cult,
good.
so we could come.
That's great.
Yeah, and also it's like you're not that far from where Guided by Voices played, and that strip in Dayton. That's not far at all, and that's kind of a cool
Oh,
place.
that's very cool.
Yeah, that people go to, and if I wasn't sold, I could remember the name of the club, but I can't. But I might by the end of the, I might send it to you if you guys are interested. But that would be kind of neat
Oh,
too if you ever
absolutely, John.
thought about
That
playing
would
in
be a
that
blast.
club. Yeah,
Yeah,
they
that would
still,
be a blast.
yeah. Well, why don't we play another song, John? And from the EP. The EP is Spin It. Is there one that you would like me to play, or do you want me to pick
Yeah,
one?
no, you know, it would be cool. It's one that Nick, our drummer, wrote and sings. It's kind of has a Beatles-esque kind of groove to it. It's Have a Good Time.
And we've got it right here. And this is the 4019s. Have a Good Time from their current EP, Spin It. My guest is John Poza. We'll be right back after this.
Thanks, John.
Back with John Poza of the 4019s. You can go on their website, 4019s.com. You can purchase their latest EP, Spin It, right there on the website. Check out the band and all the things that are going on. Now, John, I asked this question in my interview last week with the Chicago band Go Time, and I asked them this, and it's kind of more morbid a little bit, but it's something that's been on my mind lately, because some of the bands and some of the great artists that are out there touring right now, just because of Father Time, aren't going to be out there that much longer, for one reason or another. The window isn't that big right now.
Sure.
And that's why I'm trying to really, if there are artists that I really like, I'm not going to really worry too much about it. I'm going to try to get there and hear them. If these are people that I really want to hear, and I know that, you know, anything can happen, so try to get that while I can. What are some of the artists, John, that you would like to see that you never know? I mean, you know, with the fact that, you know, some of these guys are in their 70s now, and you just, you know, God love them, you hope that they're there forever, but you know that they probably won't be.
Well, I'd have to say a band that I've followed, you know, since I was young, and I really dig, is the Kinks. So I'm really hoping Ray and Dave get it together, because that's the rumor out there, is that they are actually settling their, you know, brother riffs, like, you know, Oasis, those guys, you know, it's a brother thing. But that would be a band that I've never seen. And if they do come back together, it'll be interesting, because this is, both Ray and Dave said that if they do come back, they're not going to do a show where it's their oldies like they did, you know, with their live album back in the 80s. They're going to actually want to do new stuff, which to me would be great, because following Ray, just, you know, in his solo career, has been really cool. I mean, the guy's just prolific songwriter. I mean, but he needs his brother, because the vocals together are great, and the guitar that Dave brings to it is just fantastic. So that would be the one on my bucket list that I'd really love to see.
You know, I'd be right there with you, because, you know, I've read a little bit. I know Dave had a stroke wasn't that long ago.
Right, right.
Yeah, and now he's back, and he's writing, and he has a new album out. And I heard him interviewed on NPR, and there was the question, like you're saying, John, about, you know, is there a possibility of you and Ray getting back? And he said, you know, that they have been talking. So
yeah.
I think it might be one of these things, like you and I are talking right now. You can have all the arguments and all the riffs and all that crap you want, but when it's over, and there's
right.
That's it. And you can have regrets and think, my goodness, I wish I wouldn't have been such a jerk or something. And there's really, if you think about it, there's really nothing that could really stand up that would be a reason why, you know, like you said, with the songwriting that Ray has, no one had a power chord like Dave Davies. I mean,
right.
Like,
right.
I mean, that he almost, I don't know if he invented it, but it was pretty close.
Oh yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, it's definitely a combination when you put those two together. It's like that's actually, the whole band was great, because English drummers, I'm trying to think of the drummer from the Kinks, but you know, he had been in the scene for a while, and it's kind of like Charlie Watts. They have this, the American drummers like hit right on the beat, but English drummers, and I've heard Rod Stewart talk about this, and Ray Davies, that they're kind of a little behind the beat. So it's interesting, if you listen to their music, if you can just like listen to the drums, it is a little, it's a weird accent that they do have that's different than traditional, you know, just what you hear in a traditional, what you think a rock band, where the beat's got to be right on. These guys have a little behind, which I think makes it really unique, and that's why the sound is so different from those, you know, British bands.
Well, I can tell you who the two other guys were, but I can't think of what they did. I think Mick Avery and Peter Quaid were the other two Kinks.
Okay, Mick was the drummer, right, and Peter was the bass player. Thank you,
yeah.
John.
See, we worked together as a
we
team.
We did, man. Good team.
And it's like when I see things where they're coming out, like I've never seen the Moody Blues, and I think that would be pretty cool to see, especially
that
if they've been – yeah, if they were playing with an orchestra, I think that would be really awesome. And so I'm probably going to be at a point where I'm going to need a therapist of some sort to tell me to stop it, because I can't
right.
think of why I shouldn't go hear these guys. And I'll just
right.
tell a story real quick. Actually, back in the – it was in the, I think it was in the 90s. It was when Billy Preston had kind of gone through some rough times. I don't know if you remember that, but and he
oh,
kind
yeah.
of yeah, fell apart, and then he started to come back, and he got his band together, and they played in a little club, John, in Columbus, Ohio, off of Parsons Avenue, which is not the greatest area, and the club was just a small, like you were talking about, the rock clubs, and it was Billy Preston and a drummer, a bass player, and a guitar player, and a small
club.
And that may have been the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Wow.
And I thought, I almost didn't go to that because I was tired, and I thought, you know what, I'm just tired. And I thought, I'll just sit down here. And then something in the back of my head said, get up and go to that show. And it was like my wife and I sat there, and this is what makes it a little bit cooler. After the show was over, he was walking down the aisle. We were in a booth, and there wasn't anybody around him. And so I just thought, I don't want to be a stalker, but I stood up and I shook his hand and I said, you know, I really appreciate your music. And he said, well, thanks, man. And I said, would you sign the back of this napkin? And he said, yeah. And Billy Preston sat with my wife and I in a booth.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. Talked to us for like 20 minutes about Mick and Keith and Paul. And so I'm thinking I just got to keep going. And another thing that I was thinking about also, about the bucket list and that, I interviewed Michael Davis, the bass player for MC5. Do you remember?
Oh,
him?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it wasn't too long after that that he passed away. And I was thinking about how just precious that was. You know, it was unbelievable that the depth of the rock and roll history that guy had. And it was, he was so humble about it. And I don't know, you know, if this is interesting to anybody, but I was going to do another interview with him because he said he didn't do very many, and he did the one,
uh-huh.
And he kind of liked it, and he said it was he enjoyed it with me, and I said, well, let's do another one. Let's talk more about, he was in some punk bands in Michigan, and I think in Ann Arbor, and
right, yeah,
yeah,
was their
yeah,
home.
Yeah, and he said, he called me. I was at my daughter's college graduation. He called me on my cell phone, and he said, John, I'm not going to be able to do the interview. I've got some things going on. I'm concentrating on the future. I don't want to go back in the past anymore. I just want to spend time with my family. And
wow.
I said, and you know, and that's, I said, you know, I really respect that. And then I started thinking about that, you know. I got to get out to hear some music. So that makes it, I know I was rambling on there a little bit, John, but when you guys come to Columbus, a musical, you got to play here. And
no, that sounds great, John. That sounds great. And you're right. You do have to drag yourself off the couch. You got to do it because it is so easy to just say, you know, and just let it go. And you're missing great opportunities. I agree. So hopefully even, you know, people our age or can turn it around and say, look, you know, it's not over. You need to go out there and have fun, and you'll experience great things.
I agree. And you can also look at Keith Richards. I mean, what, these guys are, what, 72, 73, something like that, John?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
yeah.
they're not stopping. This one friend of mine, actually he's a friend of my wife's, was coming back from Brazil and was in the airport and looked around, and there was Keith Richards sitting by himself with his iPad and a beer. Just him.
Wow. Wow.
What do you think of that?
That's cool. I would have been like you, though. I would have had to somehow break the ice and at least said, hey. All you have to do is say hey
yeah,
back to me, and I'll be thrilled. Yeah, that's very cool.
He walked up to him and he said, do you mind if I take a picture of him? He goes, that's fine, mate. And
that's great.
Yeah, and I've got the picture. I'll put it on my Facebook page because it's such a cool picture, because he just looks like a guy probably emailing his family, you know, having a beer. It just made me think about how human, you know, that people are. And sometimes in rock and roll, we put them on these pedestals. I don't know.
Yeah, we do. You're right. And yeah, and we can't help but do it. I'm sorry. You know, you see them, you hear them, you're like, wow, they're great.
So, Yeah, so with you, when the bands that you've been in with the Strays and the Lynyrd's, and what's the best gig that you've ever played in yourself?
Oh, that's a tough one. That is a tough one to say because I would have to say, you know, we've recently done some great shows where we warmed up to the Gin Blossoms, Robin Zander, you know, and those are great because it's like people that I really enjoy, and we get to warm them up, so we get to kind of hang out with them, the Romantics, and you know, and it's just like, oh, that's great. But I'd have to say, probably the best time I had was back when we were in LA, just playing like not big clubs, but the smaller clubs, like I kind of described. Like there were clubs called Raji's and the Gas Lamp, and they maybe held like 150 people, but they'd be packed, and it'd just be best because it's just what you envision, you know, good rock and roll to be is, you know, a crowded bar and people getting into it. So
And a
that,
lot,
I guess I can't name one, but that period really was a lot of fun.
and the energy that had. That's what I loved
Right.
about it.
Right.
So
Plus, we
okay,
were
so
much
here.
younger
I know that's why I'm getting this in my head. I think, come on, John, you got to get out and see these people. And I'm thinking, I got to. If somebody's coming around that I like, I'm gonna go. I saw
That's cool.
Eric Burdon last year, and I got to meet him, and it was so cool because he was always
Very
my,
cool.
you know, yeah, it was great.
Right.
So if John Poza could put together a perfect band, who would it be? Anyone in music history?
Oh my goodness, that's a very tough one. You know what, John? I don't even know if I can answer that. I think I'd have to sit down and like analyze that whole thing, and because I think I'd be well, okay. I put Dennis Wilson and Keith Moon as drummers.
Okay, those
Keith
are good.
Moon, just because Keith Moon's a classic drummer. I dig, but Dennis Wilson was just like the coolest guy in the world. He's like a Steve McQueen of drummers. You know what I mean?
Yep.
He was just cool. Bass players, you know, wow, McCartney, Entwistle. Jeez, yeah, I don't know if I can answer that, John, but at least I'll start with the drummer and hopefully
You're
we move
doing good.
afterwards.
Just throw in a good lead guitar player.
Yeah, well, I the one I dig, and I know there's a thousand great one. It would have to be maybe a cross between, and this is just my personal preference, but Davies, I just the way he played when I watched the old
Yep.
stuff, and Ronnie Wood. Ronnie Wood is, I think, a fantastic guitar player, and he started out as a bass player, which is interesting.
No, I
So,
didn't know that.
yeah, have you heard his new album that he just
I haven't.
put out? He's got this song called Outlaw, and I swear to God, I thought it was an old Dylan song. His voice, Ronnie Wood's voice, at least in these new recordings, sounds just like Bob Dylan, like early Bob Dylan. It's something to check out.
I
I
have
didn't
to
even know
check
he was
that out.
putting out an album, but yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah, it's called Outlaw.
yeah, that's great. I have to listen to that. I just recently been listening to a lot of Keith Richards stuff, and trying to really, you know, appreciate his guitar playing and his vocals. I think are awesome. And you don't,
I
you know,
agree.
there's not that much of it out there. But
Right. No, I agree.
yeah, well, John, it's been great talking to you. I really appreciate it.
You too, John.
And I think we got another caller, but it's almost time to quit. But let's. It might be Nick.
Okay, cool.
I'm not, or it might be somebody. Well, let's just try it anyway.
Okay.
You're on John
How you
Talk
doing?
Radio.
How you doing, John?
Hi.
Good. How
Hi,
are you?
good, good. I just want to tell your guests, I heard you talking about the Kinks. You know how a rock historian I am. The Kinks was playing at a small club in 1965, and Mick Avery had got peed off with Dave Davies backstage. They'd both been drinking, and he punched Dave Davies out in the middle of the show, and the Kinks had to cancel the rest of the show. I just think it was a little bit of too much whiskey between the two of them. So I had
That's
to bring this up
hilarious.
and everything. And it was really been an enjoyable show to listen to, and I wish your guest the best of luck in all his touring and stuff too.
Well,
Thanks,
thanks,
man.
You both have a good evening now.
You too,
And I
thanks.
think, and it, John, I think you talked a little bit about Oasis. That was kind of the newest creation of the Kinks with the Gallagher brothers beating each other up on stage.
Exactly. Exactly. Hilarious. That's rock and roll, though. That's great.
Yeah, that's amazing. John, thank you so much for being on. I really appreciate it. And
I hope we see you in Columbus, man.
Yeah, just let me know when you're going to be there. It's like 10-15 minutes for us to get over there. So thank you so much, and I want to thank everyone for listening to John Talk Radio tonight. Everybody have a great rest of the weekend, and take care.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.